Okay, this is your turn now this hour. We're going to take your phone calls with Jeff Grupp as we talk about what we've been talking about, and that, of course, is the telementation and his work in that entire arena of philosophy. We'll be back with Jeff in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. We're with Jeff Grupp, the empiricist. I still love that, Jeff.
Yep, me too.
Are you glad you went into philosophy in school?
Oh, George, I knew from when I was in junior high that that was it for me. I think everybody has those moments like they know something is really it. I think you probably had that. And you got to obey that stuff. It works. I mean, everybody will tell you, oh, you'll never make money. But no, if your passion's there, it will happen.
It will happen. Were you into Aristotle, Plato when you were younger?
Oh, yeah, right. Those are the first two I studied when I got to college. All of them. I mean, I'm into, you know, African philosophy, Native American, you know, European, pretty much anything, philosophy of science, the whole deal. I just made for it for some reason. It's in my numerology. If you look up my numerology, it'll say seeker of information.
You had a UFO experience back a few years ago.
Yes, I've had two, but the first one was the dramatic one. This is one of the most extraordinary moments of my life. 2007, this was. All of a sudden, for some reason, I think a lot of your listeners will recognize this kind of thing happen. You ever been started to become obsessed with something, and then it happens, and then it fades away after your obsession? Yeah, all of a sudden happened where about 2 weeks before the event, I just started thinking about UFOs. This was kind of triggered after listening to that, I forgot his name, Scott Stevens, I think is that weatherman.
The weatherman, sure.
Yeah, a great guy. He was talking about chemtrail UFOs, and all of a sudden, it's like that happened for a reason, that him talking about that, and I heard it. So I became obsessed with listening, or with thinking about that, and I was, for some reason, had this idea in my mind, I'm going to see a UFO, probably a chemtrail UFO. And this obsession grew and grew and grew in me, and all of a sudden, I was playing basketball outside at my old house, and I was looking up. I have a tendency to look up in the sky, watching chemtrails and so forth, like a lot of your listeners probably do. And I was looking up at one, and all of a sudden, I said, "What is that?" You know, about maybe six plane lengths behind a plane, traveling in a perpendicular direction, something came into existence. Or else it came into visibility. It was a dark gray, sort of blobish, oval-type-shaped item moving towards the chemtrail, maybe twice as fast as the plane was going in, you know, the perpendicular direction. And then as it moved across the chemtrail, it gained its light, its color and light changed. It became brighter and brighter of a gray. Finally, at the point, it became so bright, it was almost a white light. It was shining light or reflecting light or something. And then it crossed the chemtrail and then became darker and darker back to its original color and then was gone. Now, I found out later, and I kind of knew a little bit beforehand, that this is a very common type of UFO experience. I think Brother Michael Diamond has that interesting book, which he's been on your show actually talking about it.
Oh, yeah,
that is one of the great books, nice little pamphlet almost, quick read, but loaded with info. But anyways, the thing that was so amazing about this is what happened with my consciousness. I knew beforehand it was going to happen. But then while it happened, it was almost, it's hard to explain because it's so, it's not the everyday dinner table conversation topic. But while it was happening, it was all I could just say is it was like I was having a feeling telepathic experience with the UFO, not necessarily with its inhabitants, if there was any, but with the thing itself. It kind of reminds me of I think his name is Constable, Trevor James Constable. He writes about, you know, UFOs being alive. It reminded me a lot of that because it was almost like it was speaking to me at my feeling level, saying, yes, it wasn't anything dramatic. It was sort of speaking in me. You know, speaking into me, it was almost just saying, yes, you're seeing a UFO. You've known you're real. You knew you were going to see one. This is how reality is. So it was just like a heightened state of consciousness that I was at that was built up through this 2 weeks before. You know, then I asked these questions. How could, it was almost like time didn't exist in its proper order at that point. You know, we're supposed to have event after event after event. And then, you know, you get to a certain event and there's events before and events after. No, it was like this was one big happening, which started 2 weeks before the event and then faded away quickly after, which is all centered around an alteration in consciousness that I had, especially at the moment. It was just a very profound. It changed a lot of, you know, I really dwelled on this experience quite a bit after, specifically because how could, you know, that thing be interacting with my consciousness? How could it start interacting with my consciousness 2 weeks before, if that's even really what happened?
Sure.
And, you know, I thought UFOs were supposed to be evil. This thing was a playful and joyful type of entity that I was integrating with. So, you know, a lot of questions, you know, so was it an Illuminati UFO? It doesn't look like it. Was it, if so, what other kind is it? You know, Laviolettes, Pulsar extraterrestrials, were they involved in this? You know, a lot of interesting questions, but it really opened me up to the idea that, you know, there are some really positive forces around possibly.
All right, let's go to the phones. We'll pick it up by going to Napa, California, first of all, west of the Rockies. Jean, good morning.
Well, good morning, gentlemen.
Hi.
I was really enjoying your show, the expansion of ideas that, from the east to the west in the last 100 years. It's been really a recent spread of these wonderful ideas, and they've affected me. But historically, the historical pace at which the Buddhist societies are being crushed and swallowed up by the Western ideas has accelerated. And the examples that I'm thinking of are, I see how the Western nations supported and financed communist China, which has now overcome Tibet, or even how our own military might came down on Vietnam and Cambodia and resulted in regional destabilization of the cultures of Southeast Asia. So I was wondering if the guest, Jeff, has any interpretation of these changes.
That wonderful call, I sure do. This is exactly where I'd want to take this conversation. So you talk about the destruction of Buddhism. That is an understatement. The Dalai Lama, I think, I'm not a big supporter of the Dalai Lama. Nice guy, you know, but there's got a lot of questions about him. Another thing that's strange about, now the Chinese government has started to select the lamas. That was always done by a careful astrological reincarnation process. Now that's just been removed, and now the Chinese government is choosing the lamas. That would be the destruction of all of Tibetan Buddhism, one of the most special cultures in the world, in my opinion. And, you know, we could keep going, American Buddhism, which you talked about, you know, Buddhism coming in, you know, Eastern religion coming to the West in the last 100 years. Well, American Buddhism that rose up isn't that great, really. You go read the old Zen Buddhists and Chinese Buddhists and so forth from 500 years ago, and then read some of the modern American Buddhists. Yeah, some of them are really good, but some, you can see, are not really getting what Buddhism really was, and it almost seems like a distortion. Then you get really dark, and, you know, think, who is that? There was that guy that wrote the book Pentagon Aliens. I forgot his name. Good book, but it talks about how the New Age movement, a lot of it is, well, to be honest, he documents CIA created and controlled. A lot of the Eastern religion coming over is associated with that. So you wonder, what is really, is a, you know, if we're going to have a revolution, you know, I was kind of optimistic in the last segment.
Bill Line, by the way, I think.
Right. Thank you. Yeah. I mean, it makes you wonder, we have to be, if we're going to have revolutions and we're going to have Eastern religion come to the West and support Christianity, and those two religions can build each other up, we need to make sure that people are doing this. And we're not just sitting back and saying, oh, I heard on TV or in the newspaper that this and that is happening about Eastern religion or Zen temple, you know, was built in the other side of the city. No, we need to be, these need to be revolutions of the people, because it seems to be a lot of this is some of the same old New World Order tactics, really, where you're having the religion sort of infiltrated and or just created for people. So it's very distorted. Yeah, Eastern religion is, Christianity has undergone incredible destruction, Eastern religion too.
Okay, let's go to the phones again. We'll go to Pine Top, Arizona. John's turn on Coast to Coast. Hi, John.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you?
Good.
Good evening.
And thank you so much for this show. Just wanted to say, well, you got to the thing where people are saying there is no God. They can see no intelligence to our design. Scientists have said this, and depending on their discipline of science, I do have a challenge for them. I would like to have anyone explain to me a half an acre of rainforest, every minute interaction that would go on there. And for them to say, I see no intelligence, I see no intelligent design, this is all random, that's a little bit out there for me. They can take all the time they want and all the people they want, but I would really like to have an explanation that would bring me to the point where I would agree with them and say, well, no, this is all just random. When I can't believe they could possibly understand every interaction that could go on in an acre of Earth. I don't know if you agree with that or not, but something I always wanted to get out there.
Yeah, I agree with you. Unfortunately, though, caller, I think an academic will beat you in that argument, not because they're right, but because they're prepared for that objection. That what they will just simply say is, through a long process of evolution, blah, 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 you know, everything's been fine-tuned, and we've got every, you know, creature in its niche, and, yeah, the ecosystem forms a system. Now, so and then they'll say, therefore, we need no explanation for your creator. So now, while that explanation doesn't hit the mark, and they're missing a zillion points, as you and I both know, that's what they will claim, and they can sit on that and then say there's no God. And academics typically do just that. They say either there is no God, or I don't need to have explanation, you know, divine explanations in my theories. That's why I think talking about something like, if you really want to challenge an academic or someone who says there's no design, I think you either have to make arguments about, you know, a lot of people say, look at the tree, it's so miraculous, how could it not be created? Yeah, that's fine. I feel the exact same way times a thousand, but the academic will win that argument. What you have to do is go find something in nature that absolutely can't be chance. That's why I was talking about the golden ratio. You know, there's, why is the moon's radius 2160 miles, 2,216. That 216 in Hasidic Judaism is absolute holy number for God. Why the sun, you know, in the number, the diameter of the earth and the diameter of the sun, 864,000, these numbers all have incredibly intricate relations to each other, and are all related to each other in amazing mathematical ways and ratios, which shows you that these things are not created by accident. You know, we all know New Grange in Ireland, the temple, shows that the moon and the sun at the winter solstice travel exactly along the same path. Exact. Okay? That's not an accident. This is all evidence of design. You have to find something the academic can't say, some random process created it. And that's why you have to find these design cues somewhere. Then that'll really challenge them. And they're out there.
We talked earlier about the Illuminati, this push for a one-world government, Jeff. Do you feel as if this is going to happen very, very soon? The push?
I think that we've been in a one-world government for thousands of years. I think they're changing it. There's like a metamorphosis that they're pre-planning. Now, this has happened before. The French Revolution is an example. World War II is a really good example where we were in a one-world system, and then they changed it. What they did is basically introduced Hitler, told everybody who he was, and the whole world attacked, and then they used the chaos to create new kinds of order. You know, they built the Pentagon up, the United Nations out of that, the CIA. So many, you know, Truman's Mental Health Act, so many things that define civilization now came out of that order, out of chaos. So I think, yeah, there's something going on. I describe this in huge detail in my book, Corporatism, exactly how I think it's happening. And so I think it exists, it has existed as long as history's been around. And history, of course, is not, as we're typically told by academics, but they're just tweaking things now. So you ask, why? Why would they do this? Well, I think the answer is the dark ecstasy we were talking about. You know, think about 9/11. A lot of people say they need a 9/11. If 9/11 is fake, as I think and probably most of your listeners do, they needed it to have a fabricated war in Iraq. And I say, no, not true, because they invaded Iraq in the early 1990s, and they didn't need any false flag terror event. They just said, we're going to do it, and said, we're going to do it. And they did. And so they didn't need 9/11 for that. So what is the explanation for 9/11 then? Well, dark ecstasy. What's the explanation for the war? People will say, oh, they wanted oil. That, I don't know about that. It seems like there's oil all over British Columbia, Brazil, oceans, Gulf of Mexico, and so forth. Did they really need the oil? Doesn't look like it. If they didn't, then why was there the war? The explanation, again, would be given in the theory of dark ecstasy.
Next up, let's go to Bill in Tucson, Arizona. Hi, Bill.
Hi, gentlemen. George, great show. Don't ever let the big switch shut you off. It's great.
never.
Jeff, real quick, you said, and I hope I can say this right, you said that you have a book that will help retrain us on something we already have on the, now I'm not thinking of the right words, to will stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. To existence.
Yeah, the book of Confrontation, and the whole point of that book is to get us back to where we're supposed to be. I mean, the American Indians, they knew telementation existed. They knew if they did the rain dance and they all got together as a group and felt a certain way and knew that rain was coming and felt themselves knowing, they knew in a few days rain is coming. I mean, so this teaches us that this is the real technology. Real technology isn't a car or something. Anybody can go build a car. The real stuff that really moves the world are things like magic and telementation. But sorry, I interrupted you.
No, that's fine. So I can look on Coast to Coast website to find out that the name of the book, or you can just tell me.
Yeah, I think you do have it linked there, George. It's Telementation, T-E-L-E, and then Mentation, M-E-N-T-A-T-I-O-N.
Telementation. Right, I can find that on sunflowerradio.com.
That's my other site. It's actually Zenflower, Z-E-N, Zenflowerradio.com.
Oh, Zenflower. Sorry. All right. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
Sure thing.
Great show.
We haven't talked a lot about your book, Corporatism. Tell me about that.
Yeah, that's the one that sold so many copies, and a lot of people. Alex Jones had me on his show to talk about it, and sales really took off after that. Yeah, a lot of people. I was just in Croatia. They translated over there and wanted me on TV to talk about it. And a lot of people say that. It covers a lot of ground and things they've never thought of before with conspiracy theory. You know, how does all this control happen? What is corporatism? Corporatism is the idea that big government, big military, and big business are the same thing. Now, what I say in the book is that's how it's always been. I mean, you can go back to the medieval kings. They're the one, you know, the king owned the military, owned the industrial process, like the farming and so forth. That's corporatism. I mean, you can talk about communism. You can talk about democracy. These are all corporatism. I mean, we're supposed to, you know, Schindler's List. We've all seen Schindler's List. That's a capitalist right there. He's a corporatist in socialist Germany. I thought there wasn't supposed to be capitalism in that kind of system. So all these other descriptions are just an illusion. The real cause of the problems in our life is corporatism. That's a better way of saying what I said like 2 hours ago on the show, that, you know, we're in civilization, we're not in our natural element. Well, the reason that civilization is harmful to our natural mental state is because the texture of corporatism we have in the world today, which is really against human psychology. Now, corporatism creates our human psychology. The reasons we have the concerns we do, like, oh, I have to get up at a certain time this morning, or I have to go get the kids, or I can't see my children today, or I have to get home to watch the TV show. I mean, these are all the product of corporatism creating us in certain ways. And, I mean, I could go on and on. So we can get to other callers. I won't go any further. But it is just corporatism is the psychology which really defines the problems that all of us have in our life.
If you were teaching, and you will be, at the University of Detroit, what would you tell students today about tomorrow?
I can't say a lot of the things. Obviously, academia is a closed group. I mean, I can't say a lot of the things I say on this show. So I couldn't be. I'd have to find a safe way where the administration wouldn't disapprove to say. But I would say tomorrow has to be a time when people take over industries. In a sense, George, that's, I keep talking about American Indians, my favorite group to talk about. That's the same thing they did. They didn't, you know, if I go to Walmart, George, and buy, you know, carrots, I don't go to Walmart, but say I did. I give my money to that person. Now, that person didn't create the carrots, the cashier, and they don't get the money I give. It's somebody who's far away, who doesn't have anything to do with the labor or the buying and the selling transaction, gets almost all the money there. See, now imagine, George, if we had a world where we removed that third party, where I bought directly from my neighbor, you bought directly from me. I mean, what is my specialty, George? I can write and do philosophy, and that's valuable to someone, and they will pay me. What if their specialty is they can make good carrots? We could trade each other, cut out the middleman, and we all could be rich and wealthy. We need to recreate the world in that structure. That's what I would tell people. It is kind of happening, I think, now, and we need to bolster that up.
We will come back with final phone calls in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Fast night. We're going to come right back in just a moment and take final phone calls with Jeff as we talk about his work, the trilogy of works, the telescreen, corporatism, and telementation. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. So, Jeff, if you're beginning to believe in this intelligent design, God, I assume you also believe now in a soul?
Oh, yeah. I've done a lot of work on that. That's almost like a six-hour show right there.
It really is.
Yeah, I think I've got ways we can prove that it exists easier than you'd think. And I'm going to try to give you a 30-second summary of the six-hour show. The soul is a fractal. It has a shape. It looks a little bit like a sunflower, roughly. And the center is a portal, which reaches into all other souls. And it looks like the soul is not confined to humans, at least the shape of the soul. This fractal structure is everywhere in nature, everywhere. I mean, the Earth has it. You wouldn't immediately see it. You have to understand some things about what are going on in the atmosphere, some rays that we have that appear to be coming from the center of the Earth, which may have a black hole inside of that iron crystal. Oh, George, there's so much I'd have to. But yeah, that's in general. This is the most powerful issue out there, or one of them at least. The somehow our cosmos has been created with this very special soul pattern in it, which we are, the epitome of, humans are. And it's really interesting, George. You don't see, there's all the Illuminati symbolism all over the place. You never see the soul structure in that symbolism. Now, one thing that's just fascinating, remember the Large Hadron Collider?
Yep.
I remember one of the days, I used to have a radio show that I did for a while last year, and one of the days after I did that show, the third show on the soul fractal, I checked an email from before. This is one of those synchronicities. I checked an email from before the show, after the show was done, and a listener sent me an article about the Large Hadron Collider, which had a picture of the collider in it, and it was a perfect picture of the soul fractal. They were showing like the innards of the collider. It was the perfect shape of the soul fractal. I thought, this is unbelievable. It never shows up in Illuminati or New World Order operations, this symbol. And then there it is, right there in the Hadron Collider. It made me think a zillion different things, but something very powerful is really going on with that Hadron Collider, and that it's using that soul fractal structure, which is in plants, planets, minds, hearts, everything.
To the phones we go. Here we go. Kansas City, Missouri. William, east of the Rockies. Hi, William.
Yes. Hi, gentlemen. How are you doing?
Good.
Great.
I'm a very, very big fan. I just kind of stumbled on you a couple months ago.
Great. I'm glad you found us.
Yes. And it might sound kind of simple, but then not. I know there's more to it, but maybe I believe in God because they say that he has a plan, and maybe that's why a lot of bad things are going on. I've always believed that maybe he sees who's kind of good and maybe may go somewhere better.
Were you always a believer, William?
I was raised in the Lutheran Church. I was ornery. Most of us are more ornery than people that weren't. I went to a Lutheran school up until seventh grade. Then I was thrown into public school, and it was really weird. And but yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's what it is. I think a lot of the bad that's going on, I think there's a lot of good that goes on too. But I always wondered, maybe it's because there's more people now. I don't know.
Yeah, I've always said I think there are 95% of us are good people, but the other five are very bad and very powerful.
I'm not a saint. I'm kind of in between, maybe. I try.
Yeah, but you're not the devil, right?
No. Not, what's that? Winter, what was his name? Winter Lake?
Winter Lake, the Satanist, yeah.
He was very, he seemed like a nice guy, too. I always wanted to tell you that. I agree with that, too.
He did seem very nice. I'm not sure he is a Satanist. He says he is, Let's get Jeff's take on this. Where do you see evil, the devil, and all this, Jeffrey?
Well, I think the devil exists as a being, and that's because what we were talking about earlier with the dark ecstasy. I don't call it Satan or anything. I think that word's overused and people become used to it. I call it the horned god, because that's why. You ever noticed how the Illuminati seems to be obsessed with horned creatures, owls and bulls and goats and stuff? And then you'd like go back to the Norwegian black metal I was talking about earlier. They were always talking about a dancing horned god. And when I went through my dark ecstasy days, which is a whole nother topic, but you know, in George in the Close Encounters of the Third Kind, when he was implanted in that movie with an image from the UFO,
mm-hmm.
that movie. And he tried for half the movie, he was trying to get it down in the artwork. He was trying to make it out of mashed potatoes.
He was frustrated.
Yeah, it was like it was in him, but his ego consciousness or something was preventing him from seeing the image deep within. It's almost like that happened to me I became obsessed with horned creatures in this crazy time of my dark ecstasy days back in the 1990s. And it seems almost like that's what the Illuminati is. They have you know, statues around and dragon statues, and they're obsessed with the owl and the Ford Ram truck or Dodge Ram or whatever it is. I mean, this thing, this horned creature idea is all over. It's almost like, you know, it really is a real thing that we're describing here. There is a horned god that is the behind all this dark ecstasy on this prison planet. But as far as the caller saying, you know, if God has a plan, I've wondered that a lot myself, because there has to be. Because, I mean, think about it, George. We've given enough info, even though it was quick. There's a lot more that we could have given, 10,000 times more, about intelligent design and a god of love behind things. But we know that you know, could be called empirical, even though we haven't fully outlined it yet. Then on the other hand, it's empirical that the world is shrouded in darkness. And we could go into that a lot more, too. How can these two things coexist? It has to be the case, if you've got God of love, that this intelligence does have a plan. So somehow, kind of like what the caller was saying, there must be a reason for things happening in the way that they are now. Our job is to find out what it is and get to a better place than this sort of dark world we live in.
First-time caller, John in Norfolk, Virginia. Hey, John, welcome.
Hello. Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning to you.
Morning.
Okay, keep this sweet and simple, I guess. But, you know, sometimes when things happen and I start feeling bad and then I start thinking bad about whoever or whatever that may have happened, and then bad things happen about what I think about.
You've created this.
Does that make sense or whatever?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
It's the law of attraction. You're creating this yourself. You are what you believe. Jeff, it happens all the time.
Oh yeah, absolutely. If somebody just takes the time to, you know, turn off the autopilot consciousness and be a little more aware of themselves. What are you thinking about from moment to moment? What are you feeling from moment to moment? You'll see the correlations in your life. Oh, I was worried that my child would get sick deep down. If I didn't pay attention to my inner feelings, I would have noticed that worry, but I wasn't. Bam, there they are. Is that, you know, some kind of clairvoyance where you had a message from the future that you knew your child was getting sick? Maybe that's part of it too. Or did you tell them intentionally create it because of the worry? You know, these things are going on within us all the time. We have to be aware of them.
What happens to a little kid when a parent goes up to them and says, "Don't spill your milk"? They spill it.
Absolutely.
They've created that image in their brain.
Yeah, good one.
Let's go to Santa Barbara, California. It's John's turn on Coast to Coast. Hey, John, go ahead.
Oh, hi.
Hey.
George. Hi, George.
Hi.
And Jeff, very, very nice guest tonight.
Yes, he is.
Thank you.
Yes, I think you're very, you're highly an enlightened person.
Oh, thank you.
And that you have, you have a lot of wisdom. And I wanted to ask you, I had an experience I've been around Buddhism for about 30 years, and I had an experience with this form of Buddhism. There's a chant involved in this, and I did it, and this has happened about 3 years ago, and I was doing this chant, and I did it for many hours as a form of meditation. And then all of a sudden, I started to not feel my body. I couldn't feel anything. I felt like I was weightless. And at that very moment, the chant wasn't coming out from my mouth anymore. It was coming out from my solar plexus. It was like a fiber that was just like a laser that was jetting out of my system. And at that very moment, I experienced complete clearness. I realized infinity. I think I entered into a state of enlightenment. And it was absolute joy and bliss. And every preconceived notion in my mind at the moment was completely gone. I was absolutely clear.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had that kind of experience?
Similar, yeah. That sounds more like a Hindu-style meditation rather than a Buddhist-style, but the results are often similar. I mean, caller, didn't you think when you had that, like, this is what you're made for, you know, this is where I'm supposed to be. We all can do this, you know?
Have you ever run into, Jeff, any psychic vampires, negative energy people?
I thought I did. I tried crystal scrying about 2 years ago. You know, when you stare into a crystal, very, very dark room, and boy, does that work. You know, I couldn't believe how that's a real technology. And I did it three nights in a row, and each night I had progressively worse and worse dreams. The third night was extremely traumatic. It's almost like sleep paralysis. And a Black Helicopter Radio does a good job discussing sleep paralysis. A very, you know, the Snow White witch.
The old hag syndrome.
Yeah, it looks just like that witch in the Walt Disney Snow White film.
Yeah.
I thought that. Well, I investigated the issue because I didn't think crystal scrying is evil itself. What I was told is it was probably a programmed crystal where somebody was trying to do soul theft or something. You know, something, you know, some vampirism of some sort was, you know, where my life force is being extracted. It was, you know, you obviously don't use that crystal. And it did seem to be the case because I tried it since with different crystals and once on the moon and once on a little pond near my house. And it didn't happen, the negativity. So, yeah, that was the. Answer it quickly, your question. Something like that was going on in that case. It was very, very disturbing, to say the least.
Text in from Karen from Utah wants to know, if a person lives unhappily, will their universe ever have a chance of changing for the better?
Oh, yeah. The whole, we're supposed to be creatures of joy. If anybody listening to this show doesn't understand that right now, you are missing the. I can prove this. We are humans are meant for ecstasy. Like I said earlier in the show, your physiology. What is a sexual orgasm? It's ecstasy. Put on Pachelbel's Canon later today, and you'll be filled with joy. You know, DMT comes into your brain every night through the pineal gland. It goes into the fetus in the womb at 49 days, or as Strassman, Professor Strassman just showed. I mean, we are made for ecstasy. We're made for meditation. We're made for joy. If you think that your life is not joy, you are a victim of corporatism, the plague of civilization. You just simply need to reorient your perspective, and the events of your life will follow. Your life will turn around.
What about the philosophy, Jeff, of living every day like it's your last?
Yeah, that's a lot of. I like to be a little bit more. I'm not saying that's fabricated, but unfabricated. And just I'm sort of a go with the flow kind of guy. But yeah, that's an interesting idea. Think if you did that, George. Everything is so special. Think of being with your child and thinking this is the last moment. You will hug that child with perfect love. I mean, that's absolutely beautiful. So while that's not a philosophy I practice, I can only imagine the incredible results people would have doing that.
All right, next up, Sabrina in Seattle, Washington. Hi, Sabrina.
Hello. I just wanted to tell your guest that a lot of the ways that I look at things are very, very similar to what he's talking about. I'm a witch, and...
You're a witch?
Yes.
All right.
And our way of behaving correctly is a statement, "Any harm none, do as thou wilt." So
sounds like you're out there flying around somewhere.
No, not quite. No, I'm just someone who's really, really aware of my surroundings. I know the world that I live in.
Well, you're tuned in. You're tuned in, and you know she's probably a Wiccan, which is a religion, and they believe in a male female god, and there's nothing wrong with that, Jeff.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the gods have genders. The Great Spirit in Native America was often like a grandfather. I tend to be a gender. God to me is a force, just from what I've experienced. It just seems to be some. I mean, it says in the Bible, God is light. It says in Buddhism, you know, Nirvana is infinite light. And that's what I think I've seen in my meditation experiences. So I like to take out gender, a lot of it, just because of what I've experienced. But if somebody else has gender in their concept of God, fine. I don't think that causes any harm. But I don't know much about Wiccan, but I know a lot of those practices were very much touted by, I think we mentioned the Golden Dawn group earlier, you know, Aleister Crowley and Matheson and so mm-hmm. forth. And those practices, two things I'll say, those are real and those are powerful. And you have to be, the second thing I'd say is you have to be very careful with those because those that get to the real aspects of the powers behind the cosmos. Yeah. I mean, symbols.
That's dark, isn't it?
Well, I don't think it's. I think they can be used for dark, and I think it has been. Some of the Aleister Crowley types and so forth obviously have. I mean, these are the people that coined the term New World Order. But I think that, I mean, if they're using principles of the cosmos, if the cosmos is created by an intelligent designer, they're just using a love-filled cosmos for darkness. That would be my guess.
San Francisco, Cliff's turn west of the Rockies. Cliff, take it away.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call, George. Uh-huh. Jeffrey, you've mentioned that, you've mentioned your children a few times on the show, and I have a 6-year-old, and she's been, asking me just random questions about God, maybe stuff she hears in school. You know, we don't go to church, and growing up Catholic, I have one story to tell, my question is, like, what's your approach to children in trying to spur their imagination or explain the notion of God to them?
Wow, that's a wonderful question. I have a 6-year-old too, actually. That's my oldest. And we tell them what we've experienced. We just, like I tell, my wife is very much on the same side of the street with me on all this. And we just say, my wife is more Christian, I'm more Buddhist, but we sort of meet at the middle and share each. And we just say, hey, to my daughter, my 6-year-old, here's what we've experienced. And it does seem, I've experienced, daddy's experienced light everywhere. And I'll tell my daughter, Amelia, if you, close your eyes and pray long enough, you will see coming from within you a light that is everywhere. And that's God. And I mean, I just tell them what the Bible and Buddhist texts literally say. I don't put any mythological interpretations. I just get really literal with it because I think that's what is going on. And they seem to really appreciate that. Of course, we do that. You have to find your own interpretation deal as well. We do go to church regularly here every Sunday in Ann Arbor, really wonderful interdenominational church. And so, I mean, I think that teaching these religious principles, I mean, religion and science aren't different. Only when you think you have a bogus view of science or a bogus view of religion do you think those two things are in opposition. I mean, we just tell our children that religion's about freedom as long as you approach it from an experiential perspective, and it's all about joy, not about manipulation and so forth.
Jeffrey, the atheist has come a long way, hasn't
it? Yeah.
All right. Thank you, my friend. I appreciate you being on the program. Jeff Grupp, his books, The Telescreen, Corporatism, Telementation as well. Websites, antimatterradio.com, zenflowerradio.com as well. Our next Coast to Coast program, Linda Moulton Howe will originate live at a special UFO Congress in Phoenix, Arizona. And I'll be there, not in Phoenix, but here while she's there. For Dan Galante, Luis Oliveira, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.